Okay.
Hello, my name is Bill, and I'm a recovering compulsive reader.
Hello.
And they gave us only 10 minutes apiece this time, so they finally put time limits on us after. They said, no time limits, and we went and talked. But they wanted you to be able to talk this morning, so we'll honor that. You asked us a lot about 10, 11, and 12 last night, and so those are the steps I was planning to cover, so I'm going to telescope it, especially since I only have 10 minutes. But 10, 11, and 12 are steps that I think can be worked any time in the program. I know the steps were designed to be worked in order, but I think that these particular steps, we can work them to the best of our ability at any time. Because I think what they essentially say is, try to live a centered spiritual life. Be cognizant of what's going on with yourself, what's going on in the world around you. Get out of denial. Be honest with yourself. Be honest with other people without being brutal about it. And work on having a relationship with a power greater than yourself. And most importantly, take your story out to other people. Keep telling your story. Now, I don't see anything incompatible with someone walking in the door and realizing that their power is over food and deciding that they want to try to live as spiritual a life and centered a life as they can from the very first day that they walk in. I mean, people say, oh, I can't work 10, 11, and 12. I'm not there yet. And I think, yeah, 10, 11, and 12 are worked well after you've worked the first 9 steps. But essentially, if we're going to start to have some kind of a spiritual discipline in our lives and some kind of a way of assessing how we're doing, we have to work 10, 11, and 12. We have to have some kind of way of looking at ourselves, seeing what our behavior is, making amends for the things we do wrong because we're far from being perfect, and then letting go of those things and not letting them eat at us so we can go from there. In step 11, there's no greater purpose for us here on earth than to develop a relationship with power greater than ourselves. And it doesn't matter what that power is. It means that, for example, if we can go to... Come on. It means that it means that by going to meetings, for example, and by sharing with other compulsive overeaters, by being an active part of the meeting, and some people talk about sitting in the front row as being an active part of the meeting, and I subscribe to that to the greatest extent I can. I like to be up front, especially in a large meeting. I want to be there. I want to be feeling like I'm connected to the people who are there, because at a very base level, the people in the meeting are power greater than myself. So the more practice I get at being in relationship with a power greater than myself, the better things are in the program. And I can also do that through prayer and meditation. We talked a little bit about how each of us have kind of a morning ritual last night of prayer and meditation. One of the things I like to do for meditation is very, very simple. And so I'll pass it along to you. What I like to do is just to imagine that there is a light that emanates from within me. And that light comes from my higher power, and that light comes from my center. And what I imagine is that light filling me up, bit by bit, in my body, and then emanating out from me into the world. And if I do that on a daily basis, it reminds me that first of all, I am a spiritual being, that I have a reliance on a power greater than myself, that power can spread throughout me and keep me safe, keep me centered throughout the day because it emanates from the center of my being. And it can radiate out from me to other people. And then that helps to keep my life centered so that my life isn't so crazy. You know, my life doesn't seem like it's just pressured all the time. And that my life doesn't seem so unmanageable. Because at the end, my life is unmanageable. And even though I don't want to admit it, it is. And I need a relationship with power greater than myself to make that my thing as full yet. But the most important step, according to Bill W., the big book, because he devotes two whole chapters to it, is step 12. And step 12 is a step that probably is the hardest for people to understand, hardest to work. But for Bill, it was about the easiest thing in the world. It was the thing that saved him. And that is that he had to tell his story. He had to talk the disease to death. He had to talk to another recovered, another alcoholic. And he knew that there was power in doing that, not only for the other person, but for himself. And that was how he recovered. I mean, he went through the steps in when he was in the treatment center. But that was what actually saved him, was, and he writes about it many times, was about going and finding another alcoholic and talking to him about what had happened to him. And yeah, there were some times that it didn't work. There were some times when the other person said, you know, this is silly, don't bother me. You know, I want to stay the way I am. You sound like a religious proselytizer to me. And I think I worry about that. I don't want to be perceived as being someone who is who oversells Overeaters Anonymous. I don't want to be perceived by another person as proselytizing. But I do want to be available for other people. I do want to share my stories with them because I know that that's important. I know I have to do that. Right now I'm grateful that I have people in my life with whom I can share my story on a daily basis. And those phone calls are extremely important. And I have opportunities in my life that drop into my life out of the blue, like being asked to leave this retreat, that allow me to share my story in a longer form and then to learn from that. Because as I talk, I'm listening to myself, listening to what I say. And there was a man, a scholar named Carl White, who's a great management scholar, who uses an aphorism. How can I know what I think until I see what I say? How can I know what I think until I see what I say? So as I talk, my story is not just a set of pieces that I can recite. And I've heard speakers who do that. I've heard speakers who have kind of a set of pieces that they can recite, and they're very funny oftentimes. They've really worked on it and have gotten it so that other people just love their story. But it seems all surface. I find that if I tell my story from my heart, if I make a commitment to myself to be honest, and if I ask God, as I do, before I get up to speak through me, to help me to share my experience, strength, and hope with people in a way that they'll be able to hear it and be able to identify with it and be able to learn from it and be able to organize their own stories. So stories are powerful. Our stories are the things that save us in this program. And so the very act of telling our story is the best thing we can do for the 12th step. There are other things we can do. We can give service to people. We can practice these principles in all our affairs. We can make sure that we live a centered and ethical life. All three of these steps add to that. We'll never do it perfectly. That's part of what I've learned in recovery is, you know, I wanted it to be perfect. I wanted to have, you know, I want to eat perfectly every day. I want to have a perfect recovery. I want to have all the things that I want in my life. And you know, it doesn't work that way. I don't eat perfectly every day. I try to eat as best I can. I try to talk about it when I don't. I'm not perfect in terms of how I operate with other people. I try to make amends for that when I'm not. I'm not perfect in terms of spiritual development, but I work on it on a daily basis, and I rejoice in the fact that I can grow on a daily basis. And I'm not perfect in terms of my life. You know, I really thought that I'd recover in this and my life would be perfect. And it was, I only learned over time that no, life just continues. But what I get to do is I get to experience it more fully because I'm not drugging myself out with food. I get to experience the ups and the downs without having them send me into total despair because I have a power greater than myself who can help me with dealing with both those ups and those downs. And I have the promises that I read in the beginning coming true in my life, that I find that I intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me. And I do suddenly realize that many times that God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. I can see how God is working in my life. I get frustrated when I don't see God working in my life. And that's a lot. That's a lot. But I do see God working in my life whenever the big things happen. And they turn out to be often enough that I know that God hasn't gone away. That God is still there for me, and I can still call on God on a daily basis and still receive sustenance from God. The big book closes, the first 164 pages close with, our book is meant to be suggestive only, not directive, but suggestive, because people are different. We realize we know only a little. And I'm going to lose the rest of it. I'm sorry. I was going to repeat that before when we started. You realize we are only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the person who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. So living these last three steps is key to being able to work the rest of the program. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with God is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others because you'll influence countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Important to do both. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find. And join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge, not dance down, but trudge, the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you in prayer.
Thank you.
Wow, 10 minutes. It takes me 10 minutes just to clear my throat.
try to make it real quick. A lot of, it's funny, God provided, because most of what we were going to, I think both of us were saying that most of what I was going to talk about and what Bill was going to talk about 10, 11, and 12, kept coming up in the Q&A last night. So a lot of it, like the story I like to tell about the 12th step, about my daughter saying, "Shit, Esther, there's nothing in here," came off and stuff like that. This is, where do I start? The first thing I want to say today is that this weekend for me has been a miracle. Just a miracle. To take you back to when I was a child, to take you back to when I was a little boy, I lived a life where coming to a place like Santa Barbara, California, to be with you would have been a pipe dream. But certainly to have come here as a member of Overeaters Anonymous would have been something that I never would have dreamed possible. And yet here I am. So there definitely is a God, and it's definitely not me. The 12th step of Overeaters Anonymous is a three-part step. The promises of 12 are on page 100, and time will not let me go through them, but they're on page 100, and it talks about the rewards of what we get when we work with someone else and how beautiful that is. There are 12-step promises on page 100. But it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, if I haven't worked the steps, I will not have the spiritual awakening. This is not a two-step program or a three-step program or even a four-step program. It is a 12-step program. I must work them all. And if I work them all, I will have a spiritual awakening. The one word that was changed from the first edition of the Big Book to the one we see today is spiritual experience became spiritual awakening. People kept writing into Bill Wilson saying, "We're not having this burning bush kind of thing that you described. Would you please tell us what you mean by spiritual experience?" And he wrote Appendix 2 as a way of answering those questions. And they changed experience to awakening. An awakening is more gradual than the flash that Bill had when he was in the town's hospital that he talked about. And what I have found in my life is that I look around and things are better, or things are different, or things are altered in my view. And what happened is God comes into my life. And if I continue to do the work, I look behind me and troubles and fears and doubts and all these various things are in my rearview mirror. And certainly I will face challenges in the future, but God has done a few things that I could never have done by myself. If I work the steps, I will have a spiritual awakening. And I try to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters. I must carry this message. But what I must remember every single day of my life is that the world looks at my actions and does not measure my intentions. My intentions, my thoughts, and my ideas of how the program could be worked or should be worked by someone else is not evident to them. They are only looking at my performance sheet of what they see in front of them. Are they seeing a stable person who is at or approaching a normal body weight? If you're not at a normal body weight, you can do effective 12-step work. Because the people around you will see that you are approaching one. They will see that you are clear. They will see that you are perceptive. They will see that you identify with them. Bill Wilson says the message must have depth and weight. You have lived in hell. You have lived where these people are. You can reach them where no one else can. I'm not knocking medicine, I'm not knocking therapy, I'm not knocking clergy, I'm not knocking anything. They all have their place, and they are wonderful in God's world. But for the sick, compulsive overeater, you can reach them because you have lived there and they have not. You can say to them, here is what I did. Here is what I do. You can identify with them. The key to comfort is through identification. How many people said to you, you need to lose weight, you need to do this? Did it affect you? Probably not. You probably even ate more just to piss them off because you were mad at them and had a resentment. But when the sick, compulsive overeater who is in recovery sits with you and says, I understand what you're going through, there will be something in you and them that says, yes, you do. Yes, there is a commonality here. There are people out there that are dying of this, and they don't understand the nature of the illness, and they do not understand the nature of the recovery, and you will be able to reach them. And in so doing, you can pass this on and keep it. You can live forever. You can achieve immortality because you can save their lives. And in the other big, big book, it says, save one life and you save the world. And in them, you can live forever because you will get it passed on to them, they will pass it to someone else, and on and on and on. There is no greater joy in life than to see someone scared to death to come into these rooms. How many of you have waited in the parking lots of meeting places scared to death to walk in? How many of you have walked into these rooms with your knees knocking together? How many of you have been scared to death to go get a food plan? They're going through the same thing. It is not an underestimation that we are the last house on the block. And if people like you who are out of ideas, you have to be out of ideas on how you're going to do this yourself or how you're going to control your food on your own, your way. And if you're not out of ideas, you're not going to stay here. We are a group of men who are out of ideas. And we can identify with the still sick, scared to death, compulsive overeater, and we may be his last or her last chance. You have the ability to send that person home in a world that doesn't understand them, in television commercials that tells them that they're filth and they're dirt because they're fat, in a world that tells them that they are unacceptable because of their obese condition. You can send them home from that meeting, and they may say to themselves or to someone close to them, my God, I met a person at a meeting and they understand. You may give them just enough hope to live one more day. You may give them enough hope that they will come back to a meeting and recover. You may give them enough hope so that they can pass it to someone else. And you may be their last chance. You may be their last chance. Because they've been to the pay and way places, and they've been to the doctors, and they've been everywhere, and they came here as a last resort. You can't. cannot give them what you do not have. If you're talking recovery and living in the illness, they will pick that up. There is a light that they will see if we kindle it. And lastly, it says, practice these principles. What are the principles? They are the steps. Build in like you use the same word over and over and over again. The principles are the steps. What good would this program be if all it gave me was the ability to exist in OA? I'm in Overeaters Anonymous meetings about 5-6 hours a week, at the most. But if I didn't have a way of practicing these principles in all of my affairs, and I came home and I didn't practice them, I might very well treat strangers on the street with more kindness and courtesy and love than I treat my own wife. The hardest place for me, the easiest place for me, to practice these principles is in OA. I love every one of you. Hopefully you'll love me back. But this is a very easy arena for me to practice these principles in because it's a fixed place. It's an OA meeting. It's an OA gathering. But what if I could practice these principles in the hardest place, harder places? Like the workplace. That's why there's a chapter to employers. Okay? What if I could practice these principles in my company, with my clients, with the people that I deal with in a business setting? What if I could buy myself 8 hours of peace and serenity there? Which I can. And the hardest place for me to practice these principles is in my own home with the people that I love the most, that love me the most in my home. Which is why there is a chapter called to the wives, and why there is a chapter called to the family afterwards. You see, the entire big book is about the steps. The entire big book is about the steps. What it's about. And if I can practice these principles in my home, with my family, and in my business life, and here, I'm going to have a great life. Now, no matter what I do in my recovery, I'm never going to rise above the level of human being. Human being means I'm going to have trials and tribulations, and I'm going to have good times, and I'm going to have bad times. But there is one constant. There is one constant. There is a tow rope. There is a tow rope between me and the other side of my problems. And the person pulling the tow rope is God. Not the person, but the power towing me out of the morass of those problems is my higher power. Those problems may seem insurmountable at times, and I may be scared to death or angry as hell. I may feel like the whole world is crashing in on me at times, but it's never been true. I have overcome, with God's help, a lot of things. As uncharacteristic for me as it is, I need to wrap up now because we're coming to the point where we want to kind of move forward. So I'm going to close by saying a few things, and I'm going to close very, like Bill did actually, with the end of 164, but I just want to say a few things before I do go. I want to tell you how touched I am. I want to tell you how honored I am, and how in awe of the awesome power that the program possesses that I am by being here with you today. I have met some wonderful, wonderful faces and wonderful people. I feel very at home here. I always said one of the miracles of the program is the people that you meet along the way. The program is the book. The program is the working of the steps. but the fellowship is all of you.
One of the lines in the big book is, we insist on enjoying life. We are not a glum lot. And when I hear how big talk and everything outside is just a beautiful, beautiful thing, I'm absolutely in awe of all of you. I stand before you. I was a fat kid, and I told you that. And I lied when the truth would have been better, and I told you that. And I've lost a little over 500 pounds, and I recounted that. And I'm standing here in a retreat of Overeaters Anonymous. And if you have doubts as to whether there's a God, if you have doubts as to whether this program works, don't ever forget that we were here together today, and that I was here today, and that I'm still alive after having weighed 700 pounds. They came to cut my leg off, and I'm still here. This program works if we work it. If we are willing to work it, it will work. It works for me. It will work for you. There is an unbroken chain between Bill Wilson and Eddie sitting in Bill's kitchen. There is an unbroken, unfettered chain of miraculous events that led you to this room this morning. They are not coincidences. Somebody told somebody, and somebody told somebody, and we walk into these rooms on the shoulders of giants who walked before us when there was no program, when there was no meeting, when there was no intergroup, when there was no fellowship at all. People like Roseanne S., A.G. Ainsworth, Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, all of these various people, Maxine, all of these various people who walked before us so that they could set up the things that we take for granted, we owe God a debt of gratitude. Because there is a price to pay and there is work to do. And there's going to be a time when God is going to pick a very special person who is suffering and very close to death, and He's going to send the most special messenger He can send to help that person, and it's going to be you. It's going to be you. I'm honored to have been here. I will never forget this weekend throughout all the days of my life. I hope that God will see it fit that we can cross our paths again, and I hope that we will meet up as we do trudge. But for right now, I do want to close. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. I don't want to sound redundant, but this is all I know how to close the book. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Leave it to Bill. He's closing out here, and he's redundant again with the steps, right? Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. That's steps 1, 2, and 3. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Steps 4 and 5. Clear away the wreckage of your past. 6, 7, 8, and 9. Give freely of what you find. 10, 11, and 12. And join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you. I love you.
Share by Shadow. Oh. if someone needs a ride, at least to a train station, whoever, they need to ride,